Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, another Sunday night of radio irreverence about to commence. Firmly ensconced, as always, in the Allstate Showcase studio on a bustling Michigan Avenue. A beautiful Sunday afternoon, Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, ladies. Whether you're a biological mom, adoptive mom, whatever you do in a maternal role, we salute you today. We will be talking, of course, a little bit about Mother's Day after 6:30. Get into all of that. Karen Conti will be here after 8 o'clock. And we have a lot of conversation for the 7 o'clock hour. Who's to blame for Chicago potentially losing the Lucas Museum? We'll get into all of it, but it is always more fun when we stop talking and you join in. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you get a hold of us. You can also keep in touch with us through social media on Facebook and Twitter. It's Brian Noonan Show. So there you go. I know when you call in, I almost forgot to tell people that when they called in, they'd be talking to Cody. Yes, I did send a card to my mother for Mother's Day. Goff, he's the executive producer of the big broadcast. You know the deal. You're nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. All right? Everything else is covered? I believe so. All the usual nuts and bolts of the program. We've got everything set. As I said, happy Mother's Day. I have to salute my wife, not only because it's Mother's Day and she's a good mom. I'll say great mom. I don't know, she's not my mom, so am I really in a position to judge? I'm kind of an observer of her whole maternal thing. I think she does a good job. So I'll toss a great mom moniker her way. But she is also the most low-maintenance mother on Mother's Day that I can imagine. Perhaps your mom is more low-maintenance. I said, we were out of town until yesterday. We got home about 8 o'clock from New Orleans, and we'll get into some of the things that happened there, which is because it is always an adventure when I go to the Crescent City. First of all, a dietary nightmare, as you can imagine. But secondly, one or two things unusual always happen to me when I'm down there in NOLA. But I had made my Mother's Day gift plan early, so that was already at home and wrapped. I was all covered with that. And I said to her, well, listen, you know, I have to work tomorrow night. Do you want to go out for lunch? Do you want me to make you breakfast? Would you like to go to breakfast? And she was like, no, you know what I'd like? A chocolate donut from Weber's Donuts. I was like, all right, done. So, 7 o'clock, the alarm goes off, I get up. Myself and about 4,000 other like-minded individuals were on Archer Avenue at Weber's Bakery this morning. That place, I'll tell you, if you've never been there, it's consistently voted one of the best donuts in the city. Just, it was a week or two ago in the Trib, they did 12 best donuts in the city. And, you know, you get glazed and infused, you get Do-Right Donuts, the Donut Vault, the usual suspects, stands, some of the other places. And the chocolate donut at Weber's Bakery is always listed as one of the top donuts. And for good reason. It's all about the frosting. But anyway, this place is a gold mine. I didn't know anything about it until about a few months ago. Man, oh man. Everybody in the galaxy is at this bakery on a Sunday morning at 7:45. It's insane. But, so I get her that's low maintenance. So I get her some donuts. That's easy. And then, you know, she broke her foot, which we talked about in the web exclusive podcast, which if you're not listening to the web exclusive podcast, holy cow, you're missing something. Because one, Cody is actually done eating by then, so he talks. And Roger was on last week's episode. Roger dropped down to see what was shaking. So make sure you go to WGNRadio.com, go to our page, listen to that podcast. It is a hoot, and I'm not just saying that because, you know, I'm in it. But anyway, long story even longer. My wife's broken foot. I said, you want to go out to lunch before I go to work? No, my foot's kind of sore. Can we just bring in gyros? So chocolate donuts and gyros, that's all she wanted for Mother's Day. Boom, done. Here you go. Happy Mother's Day. Enjoy it and move on. So it was lovely, 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 at least for her. She liked her gifts. My daughter bought her beautiful flowers, and I gave her a little something, and then she had the donuts, and she had the gyro. Isn't that nice? Instead of somebody who went, I want you to take me out for a champagne brunch and blah, 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 buy me this and that. No. Give me a $5 gyro and a dozen chocolate donuts. And that's all. That's all there was to it. So hopefully everybody else's mom, or if your wife is a mom, whatever, you had a good day today. Like I said, we'll get into some very an unusual Mother's Day promotion after 6:30. and some other things. But anyway, so I was down in New Orleans all week, and I mentioned that it was a dietary nightmare, as you can imagine, because I did not have a meal starting at Tuesday morning at 7:55 that did not have some sort of alcohol in it. Most breakfasts didn't. Tuesday morning breakfast did. I had a mimosa at the airport at 5 to 8 before we got on the plane. After that, every lunch and dinner contained at least one drink. And then there was some drinks during the day. Plus, New Orleans fries everything, just about. And if they don't fry it, it's in a really thick sauce. And it is the most delicious food and beverage you can imagine. And yet, you just can't. I don't see how you can eat healthy. Everybody down there should probably weigh 7,000 pounds. And the hotel I was at, the fitness center, quote unquote, was under construction. So I wasn't even able to really work out, which is usually my default. Well, I'll eat tonight, but then I get up and I work out, even on vacation, to try to, you know, burn off last night's sins so I can sin again. There was not much burning off, except for loading all the stuff. Yeah, I want to talk to you at 312-981-7200. If your child is ending a college, just ended their year at college, did you go and help them bring their stuff home? Did you have them store it where they were? What was your experience like? Because mine can only be described as back-breaking labor. There's no other way to describe it. My daughter's dorm room had more stuff in it than my first apartment. Now, and I was thinking back. Now, granted, I'm an old man, and Roger, you're even older than me. I don't even know if they had dorms when you went to Southern. I think you all just slept out on just in fields, right? You just had tents.
With the cows.
Yeah, with the cows.
Oh, and no tents. We couldn't afford
you
those.
Just sleep out under the stars, even in the winter.
Uh-huh.
Or you just dig holes and cover yourself with a tarp.
Too cold.
So, now, you're probably more like me than Cody, Roger, in the fact that when we finished our school year, basically in our dorm room, were our clothes, and not that many clothes.
No.
Just enough.
Right.
And then maybe some sort of stereo equipment.
Right. Yeah, and no TVs.
No TVs. Right. No, there was no electronics. Nobody had laptops, phones.
No.
I know, Cody, it's amazing. He's like, oh, wow, what are you guys talking about? This is a History Channel? Yeah, we're old.
No one used the TV because there was a TV lounge.
Right. Everybody went to the lounge.
Yeah.
People were more communally based.
Cubs win.
I'm sorry, what?
Sorry. Cubs win. Home run.
I'm sorry, Mark Carmen left.
Yeah, I just got to say it. Cubs
did
win.
You have to say it?
I had to. Okay. Bottom of the 13th.
All right.
Well, Sox won, too.
I know that. Sox won earlier today, but we don't have to talk about them.
I was in the TV lounge watching TV at that time.
Sure, you would have screamed out.
I would have screamed out.
Well, there you go. They're jumping up and down like they just won the World Series.
I know.
Fellas, it's early May. Congratulations. Good for you. I'm always happy to see a team
Baez.
Win.
Baez.
But let's...
Home run.
Let's not get crazy.
Okay.
There's a long... On both sides of town,
they're
there's a long way to go.
They're going nuts over there. Seriously.
I know. I see it. They're jumping up and down like they just won the pennant.
I know.
All right. 312-981-7200. How much stuff did you bring home from your kid's dorm? Because when I tell you the experience that I had, you are, one, I'm probably going to get the helicopter parenting text. Looking forward to that at 312-981-7200. But also, maybe I'm not alone. I hope I'm not, because if I am, it's going to make me feel even worse about my situation than I did already. So 312-981-7200, what was it like moving your kid out of the dorm? And I'm not talking about, like, they graduated from college and now they're coming home for good. This is just, granted, she's not going back until spring semester, because she's come here for a week, she goes to L.A. for her internship, then she goes to Spain for the fall semester. But we still had to get everything out of the dorm no matter what. All right, let's do this. Then I'll talk to you, and we'll hear more about Roger, since he was interrupted by the Cubs score. And we'll do all of that on the other side at 720 WGN. A local family's infant son diagnosed with cancer, but the life-saving treatment may rob him of ever having children of his own. How science has presented an option. It's Monday on WGN TV News at 9. How tough has it been to pack your kids up at school and bring them home? I will just briefly give you this. So my daughter, this semester, she didn't have a roommate. Her roommate left at Christmas or didn't come back, and they didn't assign somebody else. So she had her own room, which she thought was great. She didn't come home at spring break, so she didn't bring her quote-unquote winter things home. But still, when I tell you that I packed up 7 giant boxes, and I'm talking the biggest box that FedEx has, 7 giant boxes my wife and I packed, and we pack like professional packers. These boxes ranged anywhere from 30 to 65 pounds. So 7 boxes, plus we fly Southwest, which I love because they give you 2 bags. On the way down, we took 1 full suitcase and then a couple other items full, but we took 6 suitcases total. Coming home, we had the 6 full suitcases plus 2 full carry-ons, one for my wife, one for my daughter. Plus I had, this is all from a college dorm room. Again, she wasn't moving out of a 2-bedroom apartment. Then there was all the stuff that was donated, you know, the plastic rolling shelves that you get at Walmart, the milk crates, that kind of stuff, because they have a huge thing in the lobby of all the dorms. They call it trash to treasure. So whatever you can't use, whether it's those shelves or clothes or whatever, you put it in there. Over the summer, they clean it up, and then they sell it in the fall to kids who might need it for whatever. So it's great. We did not do all our sorting there because my wife and I both decided it would be a nightmare to sort down there because my daughter was studying for finals and doing all that. But so anyway, we get there Tuesday, we start packing, we get to the dorm early Wednesday morning, like 7:50, because my daughter was going to her finals. So we were like, let us in the dorm and we'll get to work. So all right, 6 suitcases and 7 boxes. What was your experience? 312-981-7200. Nancy's on the road. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, how are you?
Well, I'm better now that it's all packed up and shipped.
Well, we're on our way home from Notre Dame. It doesn't end. Our son is the end of first year of law school. Had so much stuff, but we were lucky. We were able to pack in large garbage bags. But between the clothes and Xbox, PlayStation, TVs, kitchen stuff. It's a nightmare.
Oh, I know. I can't understand it. And like you, we had the TV, we had the printer, we had the tiny DVD player, and then just clothes and school supplies and desk stuff, and it's insane.
It's crazy. And where our son attends, their bookstore is amazing, so you have to buy one of everything. And whenever something new arrives, you run in there and buy that also.
Sure. More and more spirit wear. You got to have the spirit wear.
Exactly. That's right.
Yes. Well, Nancy, good luck. I'm safe travels the rest of the way home. Thank you. Yeah, it's. I don't know. And we finally have her convinced. So we finally have her convinced that she doesn't need all this stuff. Because when I went to college, I had one sport coat that I took just in case. Because you never know. You need a sport coat for a picture. Maybe you're going out somewhere nice. You have something, somewhat of a. So you have one sport coat and a pair of nice pants. And then the rest of it was T-shirts, maybe a couple button downs, and, you know, like an Oxford Club button down shirt that you could wear either with jeans or with your sport coat. One tie. That was it. And again, a stereo system. I didn't have it, I had an old Sound Design record player, you know, your Milk Crate of records. And that was about it. You rented your refrigerator.
Oh, I didn't even do that.
You didn't rent the refrigerator?
Nah, I went down to the food truck.
We didn't have food trucks. We just had, they'd pull the truck up in front of the dorm and for $15 or $20 bucks for the semester, you'd get a fridge.
Oh, that. Oh,
yeah.
No. Okay.
Yeah, you just rent the little fridge. Now, from the 6-3-0, my daughter had so much stuff and she was never packed and ready. My sons were easier for move-ins and outs, packed and only the essentials. Yeah, so now it's the essentials. So today they're going through the suitcases and the closets and the drawers and stuff at home.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, there will be some well-dressed young women at the after the donation stuff. And then the boxes start getting sorted tomorrow when they arrive.
And when we took our daughter to Illinois State, that was an adventure.
Yeah.
We had to beat up people to get our hands on one of these little carts. It was like four slices of wood.
Okay.
In a box, and then four little dinky wheels on either end and a long rope.
Okay.
And that's what we piled everything on and went up in the elevator that you had to wait about 3 hours for.
Oh, nice.
It was in one of the towers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you could only fit, like, you and half of what you got on the trailer thing or nice. The wheelie thing. That was always a chore, going in and out. That was a good day and a half adventure.
Yeah, thankfully she was on the first floor of her dorm, and
you're
we were
lucky.
Able to get in. But, you know, so I go over to the, they had a FedEx station set up at the student center, and I go over and I said, do you have a cart? And, oh, yeah, we can, give us your phone. Because they don't take IDs, because the
right.
kids wouldn't come back for their IDs.
Right.
But the kids will come back for their phone. So I'm like, well, okay, I don't care. I give them my phone, and I get it, and it was a two-wheeler, but it would fold down into a flatbed.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, but had to make, I could only get four. First trip, I had four giant boxes. Second trip, I had three giant boxes and two suitcases on there.
Mm-hmm.
It was, it just insane. Cody, when you, now I see you taking like a garbage bag of t-shirts and many video games. That's what I see you moving in and out.
A crate of video games and a player.
Yeah. Is that, when you lived, cause you didn't, when you lived in the dorms, or even when you lived in your, off-campus residence. How much stuff did you take?
I mean, we filled my parents' minivan, but it wasn't, you know, it was a van load. I didn't bring furniture.
Okay.
Because who needs furniture?
Not in a dorm.
In a dorm, you already got furniture.
She had one of those umbrella chairs, and she had these cubes, like footstools that you store stuff in, and we didn't share. Those got donated. Somebody's enjoying those.
Here's what you do.
Huh.
You go down to the Salvation Army. Well, first of all, the thrift store scene in Des Moines, Iowa is phenomenal. Every year, I think 3 years in a row, literally, I'd go find a love seat for $20.
Nice.
Buy it, bring it, dump it out back when I was done.
I was thinking of you all weekend because of all the stuff that was being tossed out. I was if Cody was here to dive, he would be diving all over.
Oh, my girlfriend walked in the room this morning and goes, why is DePaul's student calendar up on the computer screen right now? And I go, because I need to know when they're moving out.
Oh, yeah.
I can go for the dumpsters.
You get all kinds of stuff.
It's in a month, by the way.
Is it?
Because
they're on trimesters.
Yeah. Mid-June, you better believe I'm going to be behind those apartments on Fullerton with some trash bags, my car pulled up.
Very nice.
I am ready. I'm circling like a vulture.
Well, she's home, and now we have to get her winnowed down so that we can convince her she only needs to take two suitcases out to L.A. for the big road trip next week. We'll see about that. We'll talk a little Mother's Day on the other side of the news, Rogers News, in just a couple minutes here on WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. After 8 o'clock, Karen Conti will be in here. She will be answering all of your legal questions. Perhaps you are a mom and you want to file suit against your child for just ignoring the day, completely forgetting. I'll tell you what, there were a lot of last-minute Mother's Day shoppers today when I was at Jewel. Man, they were having a run on their floral department, and I don't know if this was every Jewel, my Jewel, as I like to call it. My Jewel had, they were doing chocolate dip, fresh strawberries dipped in chocolate.
Oh, those were all gone. It's like a tornado hit the candy section.
Yeah.
The dipped chocolates and everything. That was torn apart when I walked in. I went in this morning after I got off work because if I bought stuff yesterday, now someone's going to find it. It's not going to be a big surprise.
Why?
You know what I'm saying?
Is your wife snooping?
Oh, please.
Really?
Well, where am I going to put the stuff?
I don't know. But
I got.
You don't have any secret hiding places in your house? Nothing?
Nah.
Nowhere that people...
Nah.
Does she do a clean sweep every day? What, do you live in the joint?
No.
The guards come through, they toss your cell? What's going on? Mattress is up in the air, all your stuff's out, your toilet wine is discovered. That's horrible.
Yeah, and she doesn't make any bones about it. It's like when I come in and I go somewhere to look for something and I see it's all been turned around. And I go, you were in here, weren't you? No.
That's
she always denies it. So I went in early this morning, I want to say 6:15.
Yeah.
The flowers, no one was freshening them. But,
well, 6:15, that's not the
floor. Yeah, but on Mother's Day, you would think they would bring someone in early and kind of freshen it up.
Still kind of early.
All right. So I got the flowers.
Yeah.
We're minus some vases, or do you say vases? So I picked up a couple of new ones. But I didn't do the chocolate and the that because, you know, she's not into that.
That's not her thing.
No. And so I put them out. I cut the stems. Did you what
well,
you're supposed
you.
To do. Oh, yeah. Oh, I know.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
that with green thumbs.
See, I never, unless I buy it in an arrangement,
uh-huh.
I just give it to give it to my wife.
Oh, no.
Let them cut it off. Sometimes if I buy her flowers, because I buy her flowers for no reason, because Cody, mm-hmm, there's a little lesson for you. I'm that kind of guy. I'm sensitive. I'm loving. Usually in trouble. So Sam's or Costco. No, I'll just get some flowers, you know, on my way to the checkout. I go, oh, that's pretty. Then I'll have them in a vase when she gets home.
Oh, okay.
And then she won't even notice.
Right. That's what happened this morning.
She'll be home for like a half hour, 40 minutes. And I don't hide them. I put them right on the kitchen table so you could see them. And, 40 minutes, I haven't heard anything. I go, hey, what do you think about the flowers? Oh, I said something. To who? You know, maybe she's speaking in to the dogs in a pitch that I can't hear, but I haven't heard anything. So, but the jewel I go to had a huge setup. Right when you walked in the front door, they had crock pots of chocolate going, and they had like four people back there dipping and boxing.
This morning?
This was at noon.
Yes.
Today.
Today, oh, my God.
They're going nonstop. And people were running out of there like they were giving the flowers away. It looked like the end stages of a riot. There was floral and chocolate looting going on. And all I wanted to buy was turkey and pears.
What?
Because I have to get back on my I had a week of horror. Yeah. Now I have to get back to eating correctly. But, so they were doing good. But maybe you have not figured out something, and you just realized that it's Mother's Day. At 6:34, or 6:40, rather, you just went, uh-oh, it's Mother's Day. What am I going to do? Well, I'm a little peckish. I know Mom likes to eat. Perhaps, here's what I'll do. I'll take Mom to Hooters. Why not? Hooters is giving moms free food today.
Wow.
Free food at Hooters for your mother. I'm trying. Now, I know in the past when my mom was younger, actually, with my two youngest brothers, she and my dad went to Hooters a couple times when they were on like college road trips. And they would go to Hooters. I can't now see calling my mom, Mom, coming over for Mother's Day, put on your Sunday best. We're going out to dinner. Where are we going? I don't want to tell you. It's a surprise. Pick her up from her house. It would have to be the Orland Park Hooters. And arriving there. Now, I have nothing against Hooters. Let's be honest. I don't indulge in fried chicken wings as much as I used to.
Right.
But back in the day, I'd put a hurting on some chicken wings and curly fries. So I got nothing but love, as the kids like to say, for Hooters. That's something Carmen would say. Got nothing but love.
Yeah.
You feel it? Cody, you feeling me with the Hooters?
I feel ya.
Oh, you feeling me? But, and one of my buddies, one of the insatiable insomniacs, insists to anybody who will listen that Hooters is in fact a family restaurant. Now, I know we've had this debate. I've seen families in there. It's always a little weird to me. But this can't be the weirdest thing that moms have heard. I'm sure you've received some odd gifts or been taken to weird places for Mother's Day. Or if you are a child, perhaps this doesn't sound too bad for you. You'd pick your mom up. You'd take her to Hooters. Mom can choose from five free entrees, Cody. The buffalo chicken salad for the weight-conscious mom. The buffalo chicken sandwich. A Hooters burger, which I would love to hear my mom order. The Hooters burger. Really? The Hooters burger, Mom? I didn't hear you. What do you want? The Hooters burger. Huh? What are you, deaf? I want the Hooters burger. Yeah, just keep saying it. You get 10-piece traditional wings or 10-piece boneless wings. The only catch is you have to buy a drink to get the free meal. So Mom has to get a Coke or a beer or something, or a couple shots. Wonder if that counts if your mom's throwing back shots and eating at Hooters on Mother's Day, good for you. That's a role model mom right there, isn't it? That's the kind of mom who you could have done anything growing up and never gotten into trouble. Or it's the mom who was so straight-laced as you were growing up, and now that you're out of the house, she's like, you know what? Screw this. I'm doing whatever I want. I'm tired of having to be June Cleaver. Now, now I want to be, you know, Sharon Osbourne. I just want to get crazy. Hooters did the same thing last year. How many moms do you think ate at Hooters last year? Give me a ballpark guesstimate, Cody the Goff.
A couple million.
Couple million, way high.
No. I'd say maybe.
Roger. No.
Couple million?
15.
No way.
What? No, a couple
I'd
million
say
is too 100,000. High. 100,000. Oh, you're both high. 40,000.
Oh.
But that's still a lot.
Yeah.
Still a lot of moms. Now, this may have been just Alabama Hooters that did the 40,000 last year. They do all kind of kitschy giveaways, as you know. In February, Hooters gave away free wings for shredding photos of your ex. Oh, that would have been easy. I'd have been eating wings forever.
I remember that. That
would have been nice. Did you take advantage of that?
I didn't go. I just remember that thing. Promotion.
That's why my wife goes, why do you keep these pictures of your exes around? February. Eating free wings, baby. Are you out of your mind? I'm not dropping $12 on wings. I'm going for free. I'll shred it up. Many locations will also give moms coupons for free appetizers for their next visit. Free meal options might vary by location. So don't, if you're going, you know, hang out. Don't get your mind set on a buffalo chicken salad. May not be offered in your area. Hooters spokesman says, let's celebrate all the dedicated moms that tied our shoes, sat through our soccer games, and made us who we are today. Girls who wear tight orange shorts. Those are the moms. It's easy to make fun of Hooters, but they've been around a long time. And the wings are good. So, you want to take your mom. It just doesn't seem like a Mother's Day destination to me. That's all. Seems like a place you go with your buddies.
I think Mother's Day brunch. I think anytime I think of Mother's Day or Father's Day, I think brunch is like the meal.
You know what? I've done Mother's Day brunch a couple times, and my aunt, who was a waitress for decades, she worked in all sorts of restaurants. She worked in the restaurants, you know. That's where we go and eat food outside at the restaurants. She worked in really nice restaurants and more casual restaurants, and she always said her least favorite day to work, and I'm wondering if servers feel this way, and you can always jump in, 312-981-7200. One of the worst days to work is Mother's Day. They said, my aunt used to say, because everybody who's forgotten their mother all year feels obligated to take them out on Mother's Day. And so the place would just be packed. And the couple times that I went to Mother's Day brunch, because my brothers were like, well, let's take mom out to brunch. I was like, ugh. I went, and it's a nightmare. Because the place is, you know, it's almost like an Easter brunch. They do a big deal, and you're paying a lot of money. And it's just completely packed. And I don't quite get it. All right, 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in with an odd place you've taken your mom for Mother's Day, or if you're a server who's working on Mother's Day and you agree or disagree with that theory that everybody feels obligated to take their mom out for Mother's Day and some people are not enjoying it, feel free to jump in. We also have what can only be described as dad's getting the short shrift. We'll compare Mother's Day to Father's Day. With actual science and numbers and data, because the kids love data. We'll do all of that after this on WGN. All right, noon on 720 WGN. Happy Mother's Day. All the mothers and all the ladies who fill the role of mothers. We were talking about Mother's Day at Hooters and how Hooters is feeding your mom for free. So if you have not done anything for your mom and you think she likes wings or a nice sandwich, perhaps get her over to Hooters. All you got to do is buy a drink and mom gets a free meal. Isn't that nice? Sure. Who says Hooters are all about themselves? Nobody does. All right. There is got some data here. What's that, Cody? We have a quick call. I see. Hi, Lee. Lee is on. Hi, Lee.
Hi. I was a server for over 15 years.
Okay.
And we would just brace ourselves for Easter, take a little breath, and think, okay, I'm just going to make it through Mother's Day, and then take a deep breath till New Year's Eve.
Mother's Day, it's a nightmare, right? For if you're working in the restaurant business?
It was a nightmare. Easter was not that great either. You know, you just had to be kind to your customers, and the little kids would come with them, and they were kind of the problem, knocking over their milk, and then you'd have to clean up. And a lot of people feel that because they're at a brunch where you're not serving them their food, that they don't have to tip as much.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that it's really more work. Because they go back and forth to the table, which is fine. That's what they're there for. But you've got to clean up the table before they come back with their fresh food. You've got to wipe up the crumbs. You've got to clean up the spills. You've got to, you know,
cater
to
their drinks. And
you've got to get their drinks. And then we had people that would come, and I'm not exaggerating. They were professional brunch eaters. And they would come,
professional brunch eater?
They would come first thing in the morning when you opened at 10 o'clock and dig into the eggs and bacon and whatever. And then as the lunch items came out, they would linger over drinks because then you could start serving champagne.
Uh-huh.
And then they would start on the lunch items. The ribs or the prime rib or whatever else was on there, and they would take up your table all the way till like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
And then what did they tip? Nothing?
They would maybe 10%.
All right, what's a good, now this is something, and we've talked about tipping here a lot, and I debate this all the time. I still tip 20% at a buffet because a server told me once that, you know, that's that. It's, you're still doing all this work, just like you said, Lee. What's a good tip on a buffet? 15, 20? Where do you fall?
Well, you know, this was back in the day. I'm old. I'm 81.
Okay.
But it was back in the day, and if I got 15%, but I'll tell you what I used to do, Brian. I could tell some people were really cheap. I could just tell.
Yeah.
And I would say, in front of their whole crowd of people, would you like me to add the tip to your credit card? And they would... And they would be too ashamed to say no.
And then you got them. Well, that's what you do with those professional brunch eaters. Lee, thanks for the call. Have a great night.
You too.
Take care. Cody, that was your major, wasn't it? At Drake? Brunch?
It was my concentration.
It was your, oh, okay. See, that was my minor. Brunch was my minor.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, because I figured I needed something marketable, like radio, to major in. And then I minored in brunch just for fun. Made my dad crazy. What are you taking brunch classes for? Because I have to know how to balance a waffle and some crab legs. I can't do that myself. And how much room do I leave for the dessert? Do I go with a beverage off of the, you know, the coffee, tea included? Do I order a cocktail? Does that throw me all off? What's my budget? How do I budget my time to get the most bang for my brunch buck? That's what I like to do.
Stupid management didn't want us to do that brunch show.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, shut it down.
Whole big brunch thing.
Brunch with Brian.
It was really great. Every Sunday, brunch with Brian. We would go to a different place, and we would do the show from there, and I would brunch. And people would see my skills and marvel at them and go, this guy is probably one of the best brunchers we have ever seen.
I would have loved producing that show.
Sure you would have, much as you love producing this one.
I would have paid attention to that show.
Let's not get crazy.
I would have liked the bacon smell.
Yes, you would have enjoyed the ambiance and the free food. I don't think you would, you know, the effort probably would have been about the same.
It's like paying attention.
Is it?
Right. I'd be aware of what was happening.
Pay attention to this. What do you think we are spending as a nation on Mother's Day this year? What do you think?
$21 million a year.
Wow, you are woefully low.
Is this not per person? You want total?
I want the total amount of dollars.
I meant 210.
Spent on Mother's Day.
Misplaced zero.
Based on science that was gathered by somebody. I'll tell you who it was gathered by. It was gathered by somebody. Sources.
Some scientific people.
Gathered by press releases.
I'm looking at this infographic, and it doesn't really tell me who it was.
There are a variety of sources.
There's
in
a
the
ton of sources on
yeah.
the infographic.
Yeah.
A ton of sources.
Recent data shows.
Let's put it that way. It's data. Not from Star Trek.
No.
What did you say, Cody?
How much? Cody said $20.
What?
Cody's way off.
It's a 210 mil. M-I-Ls.
210 million.
M's.
I'll go 150 million.
Really?
Yeah.
Boys?
Uh-oh.
You are cheap.
Ooh.
$19.9 billion.
Whoa.
$19.9 billion. Total Mother's Day spending.
Wow.
In 2014.
Wow.
That was 2014.
Good.
$19 billion. $2.1 billion just on gift cards. For when you really forget your mom and you're at the 7-Eleven. Go, well, I'll get her some beef jerky and a case of brew, or I could just get her an Amazon gift card. Might as well go with the gift card. That sounds nicer than jerky and brew.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to pick your mom up to take her to Hooters, then jerky and brew might be perfect. You know, my mom's going to like, before we go to Hooters, we'll pregame at the house.
Yeah, right.
Some jerky and some brew, and we'll lay down a base. Then she won't want too many more. Then she'll only buy the one mandatory drink at Hooters, and I won't have to punch a bunch of beers down her throat. Get her free wings, one beer, we pregamed, bam. $19.9 billion compared to $12.5 billion for Father's Day.
Oh, something's not fair there.
Average spending per person on Mother's Day?
Per person.
Per person.
I'd say $120.
Okay.
Cody? $35.
$35. You're way low, Cody.
Am I?
You're a disappointment to all involved.
Nah.
$162.94. I came in way under the average, too. Way under
well,
the
card is at least $30. Have you bought a card lately?
My wife has thankfully put a moratorium on cards.
Damn.
She said, I do not want any cards. They are a waste of money.
Dude, Hallmark is making bank. Are they public? I need to buy stock.
I don't know, but we love Hallmark. If they want to, you know, just because my wife doesn't want a card, I, you know. So I haven't bought her. I didn't buy her a card for Mother's Day. I didn't buy her a card for our anniversary. I bought her gifts, but I didn't buy a card.
Yeah.
And she was like, yep, don't buy a card.
I didn't buy a Mother's Day card either, but not my fault. You know how they have the cards divided up by daughter to mother, son to mother, from both of us, this and that? So I'm looking from husband to wife.
They have wife, husband cards.
My jewels didn't have any.
Jewels. It's always the jewels.
Didn't have any.
81.3% of our spending goes to Mother's Day cards. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah. 33% to apparel, 43% to gift cards. All right, Cody, I know. We got to take a break. After the news, who's responsible? Why are we losing the George Lucas Museum? What's going on? Why are we doing it? We'll find out. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, second hour of the big show. Next hour, Karen Conti will be here. She'll be answering your legal questions as she does every Sunday night. So if you have a question, formulate it, get it ready, and then come strong with it after 8 o'clock. Just revisiting real quick, we were talking about Mother's Day and the cost of things, how much we spend on Mother's Day. We were lamenting the cost of cards. From the 708, boys, 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 get your cards at the Dollar Tree. Some are two for a dollar. American Greetings are a dollar. If you'd care to try it out, my birthday is on the 30th. Well, you know, we're on a budget. We could probably all kick in for a dollar card. Sure.
Yeah.
30
yeah.
cents each,
yeah.
33 cents. I'll pick up the tax, fellas. That's kind of magnanimous. Let's not, let's, and, we're talking about the flowers and things. I stopped this from the 708. I stopped and I don't know whether to be, admiring of this texter or to shake my head in shame. I think I'm going to admire them. I stopped at a local funeral home and picked up their leftover flowers from a wake the night before. They were fresh, and I put them in a vase, a $300 bouquet I got for free, and she thought that I splurged. Happy Mother's Day. Here's a dead person's flowers.
We had dumpster divers call in that used to do that. They would dumpster dive for them.
Well, it makes listen, I don't think I would ever do it, but it makes perfect sense. Because if they're, you know, a lot of times they'll take the flowers, if there's a funeral at the church or something, they take all the flowers to the church, then they just leave them at the church, which is nice, because the church, that's how we used to know there was a funeral, because you'd go into Mass on a Sunday, and there'd be all these beautiful flowers all over, and they'd go, oh, somebody died. How sad, but look how beautiful the flowers are. This place looks great. So I guess, but now, I shouldn't even ask Cody, because I know the answer to this, of course. He's hanging out behind, if he were in Rockford today, he would have been behind a funeral home,
mm-hmm.
wishing for someone's demise, so that he could get some free flowers.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have needed to wish for someone's demise.
That's true.
People die all the time.
And, yes. and their bereaved relatives and friends send flowers, and then you benefit from those flowers.
Now, do you think he would have been bold enough to just walk in and say, where your extra flowers, or would he wait in the alley for them to bring them
out?
See,
I don't know the etiquette there. I don't know funeral home etiquette. It's like garbage picking from the dead. But do you walk in and say, listen, are you getting rid of any flowers from the wake? Because, you know, I'm budgetarily constricted.
Well,
and I'd like to give my mom a nice bouquet.
Well,
if you have something in a horseshoe pattern, that would be great because I'd hang it around her neck and pretend she won the Derby.
Wow.
That would be fantastic. Do you have something that said, beloved mom? Because then I could repurpose that too because she is a mom and she's beloved. So it would work on a lot of levels if you could just let me browse through. And is there a funeral, a wake that's ending in like the next 15 minutes? Because we have dinner reservations at Hooters and I gotta pick up the pace. If you could help me out. Well,
wow,
I think I went too far. So I finally found something that Cody got offended by.
I don't get offended.
I guess him going into a funeral home and asking for free flowers is where he finally, after how many years, this is where he draws the line.
Yeah.
This is where he finally went, you know what?
No, I think you've just found him out. That's why he's upset.
Yeah, maybe, we do protest too much, Cody the G.
I have no issues with anything that's going on here.
Would you ever do that? Would you go in and ask at the funeral home? Or would you wait? Would you rather pick him from the dumpster or actually go in and humiliate yourself by going face to face with a guy in a black suit?
I don't know. He might not care. He might be like, yeah, you know, I just have to throw him away most of the time. Well, it's nice to do something
no,
with
it
them.
Is. That. See, that's where I'm caught, because it does make... They're beautiful. People spend thousands of dollars
beautiful
on all
arrangements,
these
flowers everywhere. I mean, I think ideally funeral homes would bring them to, I don't know, anywhere. Retirement
know
homes
do.
Or orphanages, I don't
you know. What happened, if you're a funeral director... Blow a call in, 312-981-7200. But wipe the embalming fluid off your hands before you pick up the phone. 312-981-7200. We have to know this, the answer to this, while we try to figure out the answer to this. Who is to blame for the Lucas Museum fiasco? That is the headline written by Greg Hines in Crane's Chicago Business, and it is a very good question, because as if you've been following this, you know that the Seventh Circuit Court has now given the Friends of the Park until Wednesday, May 11th, to respond to the city's petition that the case blocking construction be dismissed. So you know the deal, right? George Lucas wants to open a museum, and it's not a Star Wars museum. It's a museum of narrative art is what it's called. The Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. It's going to be an interactive museum. It's new. It's potentially wonderful, according to this piece. It's innovative, interactive, and it's a testament to the art of storytelling. So it's not, as people easily said, oh, it's just a Star Wars museum. It's not a Star Wars museum. But the Friends of the Park have been blocking this. All right, we are going to in a moment speak to an undertaker. But let's look at all of. Okay, we've got Eric is an undertaker, and Eric joins us now on WGN. Eric, we will pause from the Lucas Museum to get to the more pressing issue of the day. What happens to the flowers after a wake? Thank you for joining us.
Oh, well, you're quite welcome. And unfortunately, they go straight into a dumpster.
Is that right?
Yeah, we used to send them to to various hospitals, nursing homes, or charitable organizations.
Yeah,
and it was nice for a while, but then with people with allergies and all sorts of things, the hospitals and nursing homes would rather not have them. Plus at a nursing home, people know that somebody passed away, and it's just kind of a reminder of their mortality, so to speak.
Oh, so they don't like flowers at all.
Right.
Or they just don't want them coming from the funeral home.
Exactly. And, some people, as I said, in a nursing home, they're sensitive
sure.
to, allergens that the flowers, produce. So they would rather not have them and then deal with an allergic reaction.
So, Eric, have you ever had people come in and ask for the flowers or say, hey, if you're going to throw them out, can we have them?
Yeah, we've had, there was one of the funeral homes that I worked at when I first got into this business. There was an elderly woman that came by, and she would pick up, our leftover flowers, and they were in very good shape.
Oh, sure.
If we were doing four wakes a week, you can't collect, a hallway full of old flowers.
Right.
And sometimes, if we were doing a charitable case where, somebody really didn't have a whole lot of money, we would help them out and say, well, we do have leftover flowers. If it's okay with you, we can, put them in the chapel next to the casket.
Yeah.
And then we'd have, some nice, flowers. So, unfortunately, the majority of cases, we do have to throw them away, and it's a shame.
Well, when you think of all the money that's been spent on those flowers, it is kind of a shame. And I was laughing about going in and getting them, but it would make more sense if you can use them somewhere.
Right. Why waste them?
Exactly.
If there's a purpose and you can get by the fact that they were at somebody's wake, why waste them? You can pick them and put them in a vase and make your dining room table look nice.
There you go. Well, Eric, thank you for the information. I appreciate it. Can I ask you this? How did you get into the business? Because I know a lot of funeral directors, it's a family kind of thing. Was it a family business with you?
In a way, I had an uncle who was an undertaker up in the northwest suburbs for the longest time, but that wasn't the main reason I got into it. I was on the fire department. I retired from the fire department, and it's very similar. We would go on a lot of house calls for, DOAs, if you will.
Yeah.
and I was very strong in science, you know, microbiology, anatomy, et cetera, et cetera. And I always had an interest in it, and it really became a calling.
Oh.
You know, ever since I was younger, I kept telling myself, I want to go to mortuary school, and I didn't want to be, you know, 40 years old, looking back and thinking I didn't fulfill the things that I wanted to fulfill.
Yeah. Well, listen, so, congratulations, and thank you for all the information. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
Take care. Let's talk to Steve in Galesburg. Hi, Steve. You're on WGN.
Well, he pretty much summed up what I was going to say. There used to be a society out in Downers. I think it was Downers Grove. Might have been Buffalo Grove. But they would go and get the flowers, and they take them to nursing homes and hospital rooms. And
oh, I think we lost Steve. So they'd pick them up, and they'd take them there. And that makes sense. I guess I could see what Eric was saying, though. If people at a nursing home see that they're coming from a funeral home, it might get a little weird. But that's all right. Carl is in Wooddale. Hi, Carl.
Yeah, good show.
Thank you.
It's very interesting. My daughter, my ex died, and she said, "Do you mind going by and getting my mother's flowers from the arrangement from her? She was cremated."
Okay.
And I said, "Sure, I'll go pick them up." And the ashes, I says, "Okay, what's the difference? I'm there." So I picked them up, and I went to the funeral. There was only one lady there. She didn't have any help. She said, "Take them all because they're potted. They're potted.
Oh yeah,
plants. They're not in vases. They're in pots. So it's really a crime to throw those beautiful plants out."
Yeah, because people now say instead of just sending floral arrangements, you're right. They're sending plants. They're sending things that you hope will end up, you know, back in somebody's home as a reminder of the person they lost. And because when you think about what you spend on a floral arrangement or a plant or something to send to a funeral, and then multiply that by however many are at that person's wake, it's I guess it makes sense, and it's good to know now you can.
I had a truck full of them. I had 12 arrangements, and they were all in soil. I only took the ones in soil. I think they were all in soil.
Yeah.
So I brought them to my daughter's house. She was happy to have them. She still got them today. That was 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's a nice reminder.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, Carl, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. From the 847, there's a group that picks up used flowers and repurposes them. Then they bring them to people that never get visitors at the hospital or nursing homes. I cannot remember the names. Please try to find them. So there you go. All right. Thank you for that information. Very good. We are going to get back into this Lucas Museum. Who is to blame? There are a number of people, according to Cranes, that could wear the yoke of blame. We have a texter already blaming Cody for losing the George Lucas Museum. I don't know if that's accurate, but we'll find out. And we'll find out from you, do you care if this museum gets built? Are you on the side of the Friends of the Park, or are you on the side of, well, pretty much everybody else? 312-981-7200. We'll talk about it after this on WGN. Oh, little Chicago. City which needs as many tourism dollars as we can get, I think. According to some people, though, that's not a good enough reason to allow the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art to be built. A very interesting piece in Crane's Chicago Business the other day, written by Greg Hines, who tries to find out who gets the blame for what's going on now. And as I mentioned, the Seventh Circuit Court has given the Friends of the Park until next Wednesday, May 11th, to respond to the city's petition that the case blocking construction be dismissed. So you know where this is, the proposal is going to be. They're saying we're going to, now they want to tear down the old part of McCormick Place, the big brown building on the east side of Lakeshore Drive, because most of the convention action is happening on the other side, on the new side, on the west side, in that McCormick Place. So the museum and its surrounding gardens and things, according to all the drawings, would be the parking lot south of Soldier Field and into the area that now houses that part of McCormick Place. Friends of the Park are saying, no, you can't build there. It's supposed to be, you know, just open park and beautiful gardens and things like that. And according to this piece, and think about it yourself, if you start at the north end of Lakeshore Drive up at Hollywood and you come south, there's all kinds of wonderful things, right? They're rebuilt. There's beaches and parks and everything. Then you get to Soldier Field. You could argue the aesthetic pleasure of Soldier Field. But then there's the huge parking lot and this convention center that is just a big block. Blocks all views, blocks everything. And you've got a parking lot that for the most part of the year isn't used. It's used during football season, used occasionally when the president's helicopter wants to land, used for various, you know, concerts, things like that at Soldier Field, but not really, you know, something that inspires awe when you look at it. When you're driving up or down Lakeshore Drive, you don't go, wow, look at that. That's a parking lot, baby. Beautiful. All right, so here are some of the people, according to Greg Hines, and I agree with this article wholeheartedly. I think Chicago needs this museum. I think that spot would be fine. Yes, the building looks a little goofy, but that's how George Lucas wants it. It's private money. I know it's being built on public land, but think of the amount of worldwide tourism that that would draw to this city. And it would lead, I think, to redevelopment south of there as well. As you move past, you know, and you get down to 31st Street, and you build some things south of it that would be wonderful for the area and wonderful for the city. First person to blame, Rahm Emanuel. They say that the mayor, while very good at schmoozing big money and schmoozing the important people, is not very good at talking to the public. And this is something that needed to be sold. We needed to hear from the mayor why this was so good. You know, he didn't sell it to the citizenry. You know, if he had just gone, according to this, if he had just gone out to us and said, listen, it's going to be, it's weird looking. We know that. It's privately owned. It's going to be on the lakefront. Okay. But all you have to do is come out and tell us why it's good. What are the numbers? How is it going to economically benefit this city? And how did you not know there was going to be a lawsuit? Who is advising him on his legal matters? Anybody? Who are the lawyers that work with City Hall?
Not Karen Conti.
No, we got Karen in here to ask her about it. We'll talk about this lawsuit, too. But so, real quick, I want to know from you. Who do you think's to blame, and do you care that this museum may not come? Let's start real quick with Terry. He's in St. Charles. Hi, Terry.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening. So what do you think of this?
You know, I think one of the problems here is precedent setting. If the Lucas Museum, which is a privately owned thing,
correct,
takes up, you know, space on the lakefront, you know, one of the biggest companies in the world, McDonald's, is located in Oak Brook, and if McDonald's wanted to open a lakefront museum, how could you tell them no? If you told Lucas yes,
well, you can always tell somebody no. All you have to do is say it doesn't.
Well, not, but it's really difficult after you told the first guy yes.
Well, everybody has to apply. Everybody has to apply for a permit, you know. So you could, the city could say no. This doesn't fit with. It's like zoning laws. It doesn't fit. Any village does the same thing. No, we're not putting that kind of business here. We put those kind of businesses here, and you know. So I think it would be a big difference between a museum, even though it's privately funded, and another kind of commercial business. That's just a zoning thing. Does the potential income for the city from tourism and, you know, more worldwide prestige, does that carry any weight with you, Terry?
You know, it carries some weight, but it seems to me that at some place, you draw the line and you say, no, you know, we can't go beyond that. So if it turns into a money game, totally a money game, you lose.
Well, sure.
You basically wind up with the lakefront for sale if you turn it into a money game and say, well, we can't survive without this, you know, huge tourist attraction or something like that. And the next one after that will be even bigger than that. And, you know, and the next thing you know, you got no lakefront left.
Well, all right, Terry, I appreciate the call. I got to get to the news, but we'll talk more about this because there's not places along the lake that are going to be developed commercially. And right now, in that space, there's a parking lot. So Is that what we want to keep there forever, a parking lot? And then this part of a convention center that is falling apart and rarely used because we built a brand new convention center right across the street. I mean, I remember when the auto show and stuff was in that part of McCormick Place. Now everything is on the other side where the hotels are and everything else. So you've got something there that, you know, theoretically you're using to generate revenue from conventions and things. Why not generate revenue with something that is going to be aesthetically pleasing, even though it'll be odd? We'll talk more about it on the other side of the news. Roger in a couple minutes here on WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Karen Conti will be here after 8 o'clock, and she will be answering your legal questions. Perhaps we'll get into this, a little bit of the Friends of the Park lawsuit. They've been given till Wednesday the 11th to respond to the city's petition that the case blocking construction be dismissed. We are talking about the Lucas Museum, an interesting article in Cranes by Greg Hines. Who is to blame for the Lucas Museum fiasco? The mayor took the first hit. They also blame George Lucas for not doing the same thing they said the mayor should have done, basically getting out and stumping, talking to reporters, talking to civic groups, talking to anybody who would listen about the museum, and that it wasn't going to be a quote-unquote Star Wars museum, but an innovative, interactive testament to the art of storytelling. They also kind of they also say Lucas is to blame for the design of the building, and we've heard that a lot. Oh, it looks so weird. It's nobody wants something that odd-looking on the lakefront. You know, it's his design. That's what he wants. It's a tough sell. But again, had he come out and talked to people, maybe people would feel different. Now, I've been looking at all the artist renderings of this from when it was originally just going to be where the parking lot is now to now taking down potentially the lakefront part of McCormick Place and building it there. And yeah, it's weird looking. It kind of fits in with Soldier Field with the new odd design there, but it's also surrounded by parks and greenland and paths and trails. So to me, it's something that, one, would benefit the city. Two, it enhances that part of Lakeshore Drive. You know, I don't believe that it is going to open the floodgates for more things to be built up and down the lakefront. One, because once you get south of there, the property on the lake side of Lakeshore Drive is not real wide. I mean, you could build stuff there, but this is, it's not like they're building a casino. It's not like they're building a mall, you know, like Navy Pier. It's a cultural thing. And I don't see why we're getting so bent out of shape about it. Now, a number of people have texted in, same, the gist of the same. Build it in neighborhoods like Englewood or Austin or blah, blah, blah. You know what? That's not going to happen. If somebody is coming in with the kind of money that this museum is estimating $750 million in direct investment, they want to go somewhere where they're going to get the most bang for their buck. To put it near the convention center is genius. To put it on the lakefront, the building itself is a piece of art. You can argue whether you like it or not. I'm not crazy about it, but the architecture is art. To put that there seems fitting. Yes. Do we need more development in neighborhoods like Inglewood and Austin? Sure we do. But to think that a museum of this, the people with this kind of money are going to invest that in a neighborhood is a flight of fancy. I hate to sound harsh, but they're not taking their $750 million and going into Inglewood. You know, let's focus on getting some regular businesses there. And to say, well, you know, children of that neighborhood would not be able to go to the museum. First of all, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of programs for school kids at the museums, just like there are at the museums we have now. You know, they're at museum campus, which would be pretty much where the Lucas Museum would be, right off the museum campus. So they also blame the Friends of the Park. They blame the professional ROM haters, because anything the mayor does now is going to be blasted by some people. And, you know, listen, I'm not a fan of everything the mayor has done. I'm not an apologist for him, but I think we're being silly to let this go. But I want to know what you think. 312-981-7200. Krishnan is in Chicago. Hi, Krishnan.
Hi, Brian. I've been a fan of yours since the overnight show and the sports show you did in the evenings.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I'm, I guess, in the minority. I'm in favor of the new location for the Lucas Museum. I think it's a wonderful idea. We really replace an eyesore, and it would add to the museum campus facilities that are already there. The problem I see, however, is you have to remember that the McCormick Place is owned by the Pier. Yeah. And so essentially you have to get the state's approval, and we know nothing is getting approved by the state right now anyway. So that would be one issue. The other issue that kind of concerns me as a Chicago taxpayer is Rahm has mentioned that he'd have to borrow money in order to fund improvements or the tear down and the rebuild and what have you, that it isn't going to be an entirely privately financed activity, and we're already having problems. So what I would propose, if the powers that be would go with this idea, because I think, like you've said over and over tonight, that it'd be a wonderful idea to add to inducing people to come to Chicago, is the state also controls White Sox Park.
Right.
The UC. Why not sell that to a private entity, get that off the books so that the state can generate some money and use the money that would come in, much like the money that our city wasted by leasing the Skyway and the parking meters
sure.
In the city, get the money from the outright sale of White Sox Park, which is only benefiting Jerry Reinsdorf. He's getting a free ride for that, and use that money to finance the building of the Lucas Museum. I think it would be a wonderful addition to Chicago. And like you said, there's not enough space east of Lakeshore Drive all the way down until you get past 65th Street, where they're putting in parks and right. On the old U.S. Steel campus that was down there. So, yeah, I think what we're getting, it would be a net win. We're getting additional parks on what had been private facility. Now let's tear down a structure that is really an eyesore and get a real addition to the city where people want to go and where people will want to spend additional money staying in the hotels, and we'll get more tax revenue that way as well. I agree with you wholeheartedly. So,
all right.
but there is that issue of,
yeah, there's always something. We get nothing
yes.
for free, Krishna. We know that. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Joel's in Chicago. Hi, Joel.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Good, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just two things. When we talk about the Friends of the Park, it's not like they're just dreaming up things to, or they're not in existence just to dream up things to
right.
scuttle projects. I mean, they actually have a plan in mind, and I think it stems from the plan of Chicago of 1909, which our first urban planner, Daniel Burnham, had devised. And his point was, you know, this lakefront is a gem. It's a valuable resource, and we should always uphold that as such and try to keep it part of a public place to enjoy. And I agree with the former caller. I don't remember his name, but he was saying that, you know, once you do this, you can start the floodgates. But as we know, it's already kind of started. I mean, we have Marshall Field, the Field Museum. That was sort of a private thing. The one thing that did exist in the era of Daniel Burnham, 1909, the only thing east of Michigan was the Art Institute. So you got private interests to put things in the park,
right?
Just based on who they were and the amount of money they could throw at it.
You look at the McCormick Place building that's there now. And
yeah.
if you replace that with something that looks better, surrounded by more green space, I don't see how that negates the beauty of the lakefront. I think it actually makes it look better. It brings more people down to that area. They're saying they're going to put a hotel on Navy Pier. Well, that's, you know, Navy Pier is now a mall. So, you know, if we're going to be sticklers, the pier was there and, you know, we used to have festivals on it and everything else. Now it's just a private commercial endeavor that's generating tax money and tourist money.
Yes. Yeah, you know what? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I can't get into an argument with whether that building, McCormick Place, is an eyesore or not. I actually happen to think it's a pretty impressive visually. And I know, like, I'm a stagehand in town.
Okay.
So I know it still is functioning. You know?
Oh, sure, it's still it needs repairs, the roof leaks and things like that, but, you know, it's old.
Yeah.
So it needs some upgrades.
Anyway, yeah. So I just, you know, if it's going to be, the issue is I go with the Friends of the Park. They're trying to uphold a traditional value, and I think it's important to really uphold it and keep at bay construction as much as we can. We know it's going to happen. That's just progress.
Well, Joel, I appreciate the call. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. A couple of texts real quick from the 708, cutting off our nose despite our face. If I could see if it was a casino or something, but a museum on the museum campus, how dare they? I am clutching my pearls, LOL. Let's see. In the year that we were supposed to host the Olympics, we run off a world-class museum, but it's okay to build a hotel on top of Navy Pier or put a gondola tram over the Chicago River. Let's see. Love to have it, not on the lakeside, from the 312. Yes, a weird building no one's ever seen before. It's just like when they tried to build Mr. Eiffel's Tower. That sure would have been ugly. That's true. Let's see. To lose this would be foolish. Why can't the mayor proclaim eminent domain to get back the parking meters in the Skyway? The Friends of the Park are jerks. That's from the 815. 847, put a new museum with the existing museums on the museum campus. What idiot thought that up? Hope the sarcasm comes through here. That's from Sue. Yes, it did come through, Sue. So there you go. We've got some more calls. If you want to weigh in, 312-981-7200. Who's to blame for what's happening with the proposed Lucas Museum? And is it something you'd even want to see? I say yes. I think it would be a benefit to the city in a number of ways. Some of you agree, some of you don't. That's the beauty of WGN. Karen Cox will be with us after 8 o'clock, so if you have a legal question, get it in now. We're talking about the Lucas Museum, which may not happen. Who do you think's to blame, and do you care? Do you even want to see it? Duke is in Milwaukee. Hi, Duke, you're on WGN.
How you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Okay, here's my philosophy. The area where the president's library is, I understand that's a depressed area.
Yep.
Now, if you put the museum next to the library, people would go there, you know, to visit the museum, visit the library, and then eat and drink in that area.
Yeah, I think it would drive development south of the building. I think if you got down to 31st Street, 35th Street, down just south of there, past where another huge parking lot is, you'd start seeing maybe a couple more hotels pop up there as you start skirting Bronzeville and that kind of thing. So I think the amount of tourism money that it would bring in, I think the international prestige that it would bring, and I think the enhancement of that part of Lakeshore Drive and that part of the lake, It's part of the museum campus already. So I think it makes sense.
So do I.
All right, Duke, thanks for the call. Dan is in Wheeling. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan. How you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. You know, I just heard your comment about the Lucas Museum and its design, and it would look kind of goofy.
That's the big rip that most people are saying. It looks so weird. We can't imagine a building that looks that weird on the lake.
Lucas Soldier Field.
That's what I'm saying. It fits with the Lucas Soldier Field.
It's beautiful inside, but it looks like a spaceship landed on a historical building.
Yeah, that was a bad move when they decided to just drop that inside the old historic structure. That was
I agree. You know, it's fine. ours, I think you're right with Mayor Emanuel. You know, he should have gotten out there and said it's just not a Star Wars museum. I mean, this is an educational, hands-on, or, you know, virtual event.
Yeah, it was incumbent upon the mayor and incumbent upon George Lucas to come out and say, hey, listen, here's the pitch. We know people are a little hesitant, but here's what's going on. And if you look at where it would sit, it's a parking lot. It's not beautiful, open lakefront area that they'd be replacing. It's a parking lot and a part of a convention center.
Isn't everybody worried about money in the city of Chicago?
Well, sure.
Lucas in Chicago, it'll draw millions, if not hundreds of millions of people. I mean, who doesn't want to go there? Navy Pier did. They rebuilt Navy Pier. How many does that draw?
It draws a lot, and then now it draws so much that they're putting a hotel there. Dan, I appreciate the call. Somebody from the 708, this is a quote from the Burnham Plan. So this is what was being quoted when we talked to one of our earlier callers, and it's what the Friends of the Park are hanging their hat on. A quote from the Burnham Plan, quote, "The development of centers of intellectual life and of civic administration so related as to give coherence and unity to the city." End quote. He proposed museums and library in Grant Park near the Art Institute. People shouldn't use this as a defense for Friends of the Park if they don't know what they're talking about. And here's from the 630. Let the Hollyweird idiot and put his self-aggrandizing shrine in Hollyweird. Then the next big quake can shake it off into the ocean. Well, that's an intelligent thought. Yes, the guy who's one of the most creative filmmakers ever is a Hollyweird idiot. All right. Listen, and yes, it's the Lucas Museum. He's paying for it. So yes, it bears his name. It's a centerpiece of the technology that he's helped create to help advance storytelling and filmmaking. So sure, you could say it's self-aggrandizing. I think it's also beneficial. I think it's important. I think it's educational. From the 312, there's no reason that all those things couldn't be built west of the drive and still have a Great Lake. Without putting them in the park. Again, it's a parking lot. What are we losing? You know, they got rid of Miggs Field, put Northerly Island there, put the amphitheater there. But now, most of the trails and stuff are closed because the water took them away. You know? So, if you've got a museum that is surrounded by public lands, what's the problem? I don't understand it. Janine's in Springfield. Hi, Janine.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
I think they need to put that museum in there. I love the original design. It looks like a Chicago Windy City wave off the water. I mean, I think it's brilliant. I think George Lucas's wife is definitely adding to the cosmetics of the city, the dollars coming in. The progressiveness of cinematography. We're filming here a lot in Chicago. I mean, it's a win-win. I don't know why the bluebirds are putting this thing down.
I don't know. A lot of different reasons, Janine, but I agree with you. Thanks for the call from the 773. No, no, no. Building east of the drive. Lucas is being selfish and egotistical when there are other locations available. Our lakefront is precious. I'm going to donate to Friends of the Park to help fight it. Okay, but you already have stuff there. So you've got a park at Northern Island. You're going to have parks around the museum. And you're taking the museum and replacing a convention center. Okay? I'm not quite seeing where the issue is. I don't see how a museum is going to denigrate the lakefront. I just don't get it. But we'll find out, because the Friends of the Park have till the 11th to respond to the city's petition that the case blocking construction be dismissed. We will see what happens as that goes on. Would you go to the Lucas Museum, Cody?
Would I go to it?
Would you go to it?
At some point.
Do you go to museums? Do you enjoy a culture?
Yeah.
Do you enjoy learning things? Do you enjoy edutainment?
Yeah, I love it. That's why I work for this program.
Really?
I try to edutain.
It's edutaining, I'll tell you that.
They should have lightsaber battle choreography classes.
It's not just a Star Wars museum.
There will be a lot of Star Wars, sure. Pretty significantly Star Wars focused.
I think if they just made the museum in the shape of Darth Vader's helmet. Would people be upset about that?
It still looked better than Soldier Field.
Yeah. Soldier Field looks goofy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there. We're stuck with it. Had I been in town when that was done, I would have been railing against that move. That was a bad move.
They should make another bean and put it inside that. It's a second cloud gate, but it's 800 acres.
No, we'll just keep building onto Navy Pier. Make that more and more Mall of America-ish. But we got a Ferris wheel there, so it's beautiful.
Listen, in places in China, they're building islands. Why don't we just build an island and put it out there?
Oh, that would be nice. Just float it. Float it like the Atlantis Resort in Nassau.
There you go.
Just float it out there. All right, maybe we do that. We'll float that idea, too. You know what we'll do after the news? We'll talk to Karen Conti. So if you have a legal question, 312-981-7200 is how you get it to us on WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, Sunday night after the 8 o'clock news. It is always my pleasure to welcome in Karen Conti, who is here to help you out, as she always does, answering your legal questions at 312-981-7200. If you have a legal question, get it in now so we can get to it. A lot of big stories. Welcome. How are you?
Good. How are you? Happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers in our listening audience.
Yes, everybody hopefully had a lovely Mother's Day. It's not over yet. If you've forgotten, you can still make a last-ditch attempt. Jewel may have a couple flowers left. I don't know. They were going out of there like they were giving them away earlier.
It's always email.
Yes, email, text, just a quick call to mom. And then, because you know it's late, maybe she's getting ready for bed. Oh, I just wanted to catch you before you went to sleep. Throw something.
We
in
hope
there.
You did something more than that. But
well, you never can tell.
No.
Hey, can we start out real quick with something we talked about for the last hour? The Friends of the Park and the city's lawsuit and the Seventh Circuit saying that the Friends of the Park had up until the 11th to respond to the city. Have you been following this lawsuit at all?
I kind of haven't, but give it to me.
Well, they're saying the Friends of the Park is saying that, you know, they can't build the Lucas Museum there, and the city has asked the Seventh Circuit Court to make the Friends of the Park respond to the city's petition that the case blocking construction be dismissed. So the city wants the case dismissed. Friends of the Park need to tell the court why, you know. What is that? When a court tells you you have to answer to this, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess I don't know the whole story. And I'm not sure why the Seventh Circuit is involved, because it's the appellate court. That's the federal appellate court. And I'm not sure how the federal court got involved in this in the first place, because usually this would be something that would be a state court issue. Again, you know, I should have read up on that, but I wasn't paying attention. I don't know why it didn't interest me. This whole controversy has not interested me.
Really? Yeah, I've just started paying attention to it recently because I don't understand all the uproar. I don't, you know, if they were saying, hey, we're going to build, I don't know, you pick what other commercial thing is going to be there other than a museum, I would say, well.
Well, and you know, I guess my bottom line, I should know the answer to this, but I think that I'm not interested in the whole Star Wars thing.
Oh, maybe
I've never been a Star Wars fan. I could never imagine going into a Star Wars museum. I mean, I understand I've seen the movies, but I've just, that's never been my deal. So I guess I'm just not very interested.
All right. Well, let's move on to something that has been big news. We were talking a little bit about his estate last week, and now they're going to be doing some DNA testing.
Right.
On Prince.
Yes.
What is the purpose of getting DNA to have just on record?
Well, I think the point is, first of all, he's cremated. So I think they're going to get the DNA from some tissue and some blood, perhaps, that were because, you know, they took it during the autopsy. And I assume it's because the siblings are going to be entitled to his estate, and they're going to have to figure out who his siblings are. Right. And I'm sure there are going to be people coming out of the woodwork saying, yes, I'm Prince's, you know, half-brother or something. Right. And I think the way to do it is DNA. So I think that's a smart thing to do. I think everyone is going to have to be, you know, submit themselves to the DNA, and that'll decide, you know, who gets his stuff.
Well, that makes sense, and I'm sure there's going to be an heir or two coming out, some love child that will come up from somewhere.
You know, and
there's always going to be somebody.
Still hear those love childs of, you know, Elvis Presley and the likes. So.
Sure, everybody's got love children.
They do.
Love children running around all over the
they
place.
They do. And, you know,
they do.
And the Prince thing, too, is interesting because it seems like the DEA And so prosecutor's office has gotten involved in it. So, and you know, people were asking the other day, like, why would a prosecutor's office get involved? Well, you know, if he was being overprescribed medicine,
right.
You know, like Anna Nicole Smith, like Michael
Elvis.
Jackson, like Elvis, you know, when there's a celebrity who is addicted, there's always a doctor who seems to feel free to overprescribe. And I think that they're looking at people here. I mean, I think they know he was addicted. They want to see who was prescribing the medicine. You know, they want to see who was in the pharmacy giving it to him,
right.
And to see if there's any improprieties, because they're all over that.
Well, and they've been talking a lot about this doctor who was on the plane,
yes,
with him when they made the emergency stop in the Quad Cities. There were reports that during his final concert, he was giving a shout out to the doctor that was there. So, you know, maybe this doctor, we don't know, is a target of an investigation.
They could be. It could absolutely be. And I think, you know, that I think that everyone is now very, very aware of that. There was just a case out in California, I don't know if you remember, but it was a woman physician who was prescribing medicine, and she got, like, life in prison for overprescribing painkillers. So these things are being taken very, very seriously now, and I think when it comes to high-profile cases, they're going to take it even more seriously.
All right, Laquan McDonald case is still in the news. Anita Alvarez, who we know has lost her job and
yes,
will be resigning, she's asking for a special prosecutor. The big question is, why did it take so long? I mean, this is one of the things that cost her the election.
Sure.
Is not doing this sooner. Why now, and what is the process for the special prosecutor?
Technically, if I'm not mistaken, she had opposed the special prosecutor,
right,
and now she is not opposing it. So she's not even really asking for it. She's just dropping her opposition. I think the reason that she gave was that, listen, if I'm not going to be the prosecutor, we need someone with continuity. So might as well get someone in right now who can start the process and take it to the end. We don't want to be working on this case, get a new prosecutor in, then have a special prosecutor, and everything's going to take a long time. That was her reason, and that's a good reason. But the truth of the matter is, I don't know why. Why didn't she do it before?
Right.
Had she done it before, it might have helped her. And I don't know if that's stubbornness. I don't know if that's just holding on to something that she thought was her territory. But it was a big mistake. I think there were a lot of mistakes made by her. I think she could have maintained her job had she brought the prosecution,
right,
earlier. And again, we'll never know who was in control. Was it Rahm Emanuel? Was it the federal government? Were they telling her not to bring the charges? Was she the one? You know, I just don't know, but it cost her her job. So I'm happy to see a special prosecutor. I think that would be great. I'd love to see a Dan Webb or some fine lawyer in Chicago who's independent, who maybe was on the prosecution side at one point and maybe does criminal defense work. So someone who's going to take a fair look at this and do the right thing.
Who chooses the special prosecutor?
Well, the first part of it is the Attorney General's office, which is the Lisa Madigan.
The state or the federal attorney?
It's the state.
Okay.
Attorney General is the state of Illinois. So the Cook County prosecutor is a county office.
Okay.
But they have to look to the Attorney General's office, the state lawyers, and say, do you have anybody there? Do you guys want to do it?
Okay.
And then they also look to the appellate defender's office, kind of an interesting little twist. And they either decline or they say, yes, we have lawyers. Because those are two offices that have very good lawyers who could probably come in and do a murder prosecution. Attorney General's office gets involved when it comes to cases that the state's attorneys can't handle. So, like, if downstate there's a death penalty case, or there was a death penalty,
sure,
case when we had it, and the states down and the counties down there couldn't afford it, the Attorney General's office would come and prosecute. So
okay,
they have a cadre of prosecutors there who are very seasoned and very good. So I just don't think the Attorney General's office is going to get involved just because of the same reasons. I think they're going to want to say, no, you know what, we're going to decline. You find someone who is an independent person who's going to do this, so there's no questions asked.
And by independent, where do you find someone who's completely independent?
Yeah.
Is it
right?
You know, is that just some a noble thought that we have, or can we find a prosecutor who is completely independent?
I mean, I think we find someone with a good reputation, maybe a former judge, maybe, like I said, Dan Webb, who, you know, he's been on all different sides of things, and he's been appointed as a special prosecutor. Remember, he prosecuted or he was investigating the Mayor Daley's nephew.
Oh, right, yeah,
case,
right.
And he was on that. You know, Bill Kunkel was the prosecutor for Gacy, and he was on the DuPage 7 case that had involved Rolando Cruz. He was a special prosecutor. So there's, you know, there's all kinds of people who can do this kind of work who have been on both sides of the fence, who have good reputations, and whose judgment are just not going to be questioned.
312-981-7200 is how you get a hold of us, because Karen Conti is here, as she is every Sunday night. She's answering your legal questions. So get them in now. That's the phone. That's the text. How do people get a hold of you during the week?
Call me at 312-332-7800 or email at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
Your questions on the other side for Karen. It's WGN. Karen Conti is here with us. She answers your legal questions, gives you legal advice. Man, you can't ask for better legal advice than that. 312-981-7200. That is how you avail yourself of said legal advice. I'm just going to keep saying legal advice as many times as I can. Okay, here's some. We got a couple text questions that we're going to get to first from the 815. A process server is trying to serve my wife for the last 2 weeks with divorce papers, and they can't find her. What happens if they cannot find her to serve her, and what is the time frame?
Well, they have to serve her, and they probably will, unless she's fled the jurisdiction and you can't find out where she is. But, you know, the process server will continue to make efforts. Usually you have the sheriff start doing that. That's the sheriff's office. And then if you can't have the sheriff's office do it, you get somebody appointed, your own special process server, they call it. And usually that's like a private investigator who has some other means to find out where she might be. And then if you exhaust that and there's no particular time frame, then you can serve by what we call publication, which means you can publish it in a newspaper for a number of weeks ongoing, and then you can actually have her deemed to be served by publishing.
Oh, wow.
But the judges really don't like to do that because they really want someone to be served actually with the papers so she can come in and defend herself, because usually in a divorce there are some, you know, really important issues that are going to be resolved, like child support and custody and division of property and things like that. So.
Now, Is it like we see, again, you know my legal expertise comes from exclusively film and television. Is it like we see in the movies where a guy will just walk up and go, oh, Karen Conti, and you go, yes, and ha-ha, you've been served.
Yes.
Is that all it takes?
Yeah, that's all it takes.
Really?
And you can actually serve somebody at their home, and anyone who's living there over the age of, I think it's 13 or 15, you can serve that person. So
also, something like my daughter or wife could take papers
if it's in your abode.
Behalf.
Yes.
Okay.
And you know, here's the thing, too, that people, I don't know, here's a little extra advice, I guess. If someone's trying to serve you, why are you avoiding service? I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Why would you want a guy with a gun, because these sheriffs have guns, looking for you? If they don't find you at home, they're going to find you at work.
Right.
And listen, if they don't find you at work, they're going to come to your home, and maybe your little girl's going to open the door and see a guy with a gun. So, I don't know. Or maybe it's going to embarrass you by being served at a business meeting or in an elevator.
Because they can come in anywhere, right?
They can come anywhere that they are legally entitled to be. If I were you, I would just accept the service. You're not going to avoid it long run, and what's the point?
Doesn't make any
no.
sense. We were talking about DNA in the Prince case. Somebody from the 708 wants to know, with all the convicts being freed by DNA in spite of, quote, overwhelming evidence, end quote, that they're guilty, is DNA all that it's cracked up to be, or is it indicative of flawed evidence and prosecution?
I'm not sure what the last part means. I do think that DNA is extremely reliable. I mean, I have to say, you know, I have been in the past skeptical of certain DNA and all that, you know, certain DNA evidence. But, I mean, if it's collected properly and it's a good solid piece of evidence, not just a trace or something on something that's aged, it's very, very reliable. And, in fact, they give the odds of, you know, 1 in 10 million people or 1 in 50 million people, they can exclude almost anyone else in the human race. So it is very, very reliable.
Not too shabby. Let's go to the phones. Ken is in Riverside. Hi, Ken.
Mr. Noonan, I love your show, especially when you have Ms. Conti as a guest.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, Ken. How is Riverside? I think that's one of the prettiest unknown suburbs in the Chicago area.
Well, it's a hometown, that home of a young lady I'm dating, and it sure is. This was a pretty day and a pretty suburb. The first question that Brian asked you was about the Friends of the Park thing. I wonder if I can just take a minute to, I'm an attorney and I did read the coverage. I'm not involved in the case clarify what they're. The city went over the district court judge's head and went to the Seventh Circuit and petitioned for a writ of mandamus. As you know, that's a very extraordinary remedy, very seldom granted. It is basically, you're asking the court to order a government official to take an act or stop acting in some way, but to take an action. They are asking the Seventh Circuit, the appellate court, to order the district court judge to dismiss the case. That is
so strange. I'm glad that, thank you so much for explaining that to me, but I have never, ever heard of anything like that in my life.
Well, you could have written the article, but I was surprised when I read it, and the next paragraph in the story was that this is very unusual, that they would ask a jurist, a judge, to take an action. It's usually used against people in the executive branch,
right,
with a legislature or a special interest group telling the governor or telling an executive.
Or a sheriff, you know, you have to do something, you have to let these people free, or the governor has to do the following. Never another court. So you're asking the appellate federal court to say to the lower federal court, you have to take this action, meaning you have to dismiss this. Bizarre. I wonder who thought of that.
Some high-priced attorney, no
I know,
doubt.
And that may not be interesting to the average human being, but that is a very unique situation. Ken, thank you for explaining
that. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it.
Yes. Good show, you guys.
Yeah, the only other time I've heard that phrase is a few months ago, you and I were talking here about the governor.
Yes.
And that phrase came up. Yes, about
someone
the writ
said, can't we do a writ of mandamus and tell him to stop doing something?
Or to pass the budget. It was some budgetary thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think my response was similar, which is it's just not used. I mean, to have a court tell another branch of government to do something as a matter of law is very unusual, you can imagine.
Yeah, I can't. That'll be very interesting. Karen Conti is here. She is always answering your legal questions, whether here at 312-981-7200 or in her palatial office suites that Jerry manages so well. Who's Jerry? You know Jerry by now if you don't really catch up. How do people get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or better yet, email me at kconti, K-C-O-N-T at kcontilaw.com.
More of your questions after the news on WGN. 312-981-7200. They're stacking up. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right, let's start with a text question from the 773. Is it possible to probate an estate pro se? My mother died without a will and only had a house and a small mutual fund. Her only survivors are myself and three grandchildren.
You can do it by yourself. I just had somebody from WGN call me, and I hooked that person up with a probate lawyer who advised the person, yeah, you can do it by yourself, and I think he tried and then couldn't.
Okay.
It's just complicated, because what you have to do is you have to do accountings for all of this property. And, again, even if it's simple, it's just kind of stuff that you don't know how to do. There are forms that you have to get from the clerk's office, and you have to, you know, write it down. You have to get it approved. And the judges in probate are very concerned with making sure things are accurate because the person whose property it is dead. So they're always worried that someone's trying to scam or trying to do something wrong. So they have to really make sure that it gets done appropriately. You may have to also post some bond. I'm not sure what is involved in this case. But I would say to get a lawyer to do it. But, you know, if you want to try, if you're adventuresome and you want to, you know, you like this kind of stuff and you're very good with details and doing spreadsheets and accounting, go have at it.
All right. And just keep an attorney's phone number handy.
That's right. Exactly.
Let's go to phones real quick, and then we've got an interesting text about Texas. But first, Ann is in Des Plaines. Hi, Ann.
Hi. How are you?
We're well. How are you?
Making it. Making
All right. What's your question for Karen?
Okay. Basically, I want to redo my will for various reasons. And what I'm wondering, one of my grandsons is divorced, and he has a couple of children. Situation is not good between he and his ex-wife. She is not on the dole or anything. She comes from a family with some money. My concern is, how can I set up small amount for the two children, 8 and 10 years old, so that the mother can't take it and spend it.
Okay. So probably what you would do is you would probably set it up in trust for them with maybe your son as the trustee so that he would be able to use that money for education, for medical issues, and if the children needed braces or whatever you decide you'd like to do. And then when the children are, say, 25 or some other age, they get the remainder of the money if there's anything left. And you would make sure that she would have no influence over how it gets spent, and nor would she be able to spend it on herself. And if you're, you don't trust your son to do that, or you know, or you don't want your son to do that, you can appoint another person as a trustee, a family friend, or somebody who would be in charge of writing the checks to your grandchildren to make sure that they get the benefit of your money.
All right. Well, let me ask something. Is there some way not to have the money distributed until they're of age?
Absolutely. You can do that. People do it all different ages. I've seen it after college. I've seen it at age 25. I've seen some at age 35. I've seen it where you get the child might get it after a little bit after high school, a little bit after college, a little bit, you know, when they're 35. So you can set it up however you want to do it.
All right. Well, okay. But this is what I mean. So are you saying, though, that a trustee would have to be named?
Yes, you would have to name a trustee, and you'd probably name a successor trustee in case that trustee either died or didn't want to do the job. And you, normally you would pick a family member or a friend who might do it without charging you, so you wouldn't eat up the fees, you know, in what you're giving your grandkids.
That's what I'm concerned, and I will say their father, my grandson, I wouldn't put his name on there because then I figure,
Yeah, no, I mean, you can do what you want. And, you know, frankly, call me or send me an email and I'll give you a reasonably priced lawyer who could maybe set this up for you and get it done. Because it sounds like you've got really good intentions and you've got concerns and you should. So, you know, I'll help you get it done.
How would Ann get a hold of you?
Best thing is to email me, kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com. Tell me where you're located and maybe I can try to find you somebody who might be convenient for you to go visit.
All right. Good luck, Ann. Hope it works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always family issues. There's always something going on. And but that's a good idea. So you set up the trust. Somebody oversees the trust. And then the kids, whatever's left at what. And I thought it was like a uniform age, but it can be any age.
Oh, it can be any age, yeah. I'm a trustee of a trust, and I've got two children who are going through different phases, and I have to decide whether, you know, do they really need these books for college? The answer is yes. Do they need this? Do they need a car? Not sure.
Right.
You know, like those kind of things. So I'm making decisions, and they're hard decisions to make sometimes because, you know, kids are needy and they want things.
They whine.
But you have to spell out what it is that you want that money to be spent on. It's your money, so you get a chance to do that.
Karen Conti's here answering your questions at 312-981-7200. Not too much time left, so get your questions in. This one was interesting. A text from the 630. The Texas Attorney General says that Target has to provide a copy of its customer safety policy with regard to transgender people using the bathroom in their stores. What is the Attorney General trying to accomplish with this? That's from Hannah.
Well, that's interesting. Target apparently has announced that they're going to have a bathroom. I'm not sure exactly what their policy is, but it's something like you can use this bathroom with your elderly parent or if you want to come in here. I mean,
whatever gender you identify as, you can use that bathroom.
And there are many corporations that are taking that position. So
Starbucks, a lot of them.
My educated guess is that the Attorney General, which is normally in any state, the consumer advocate,
okay,
the lawyer for the state, if you will, doesn't like that policy and is saying to Target, listen, give me your safety policy. Tell me if you've really thought through what you're doing here because I'm getting ready to tell you you can't do it. And I'm going to give you a chance to explain yourself before I take a position on this. And it may be a lawsuit. It may be an edict. I don't know. Maybe an advisory opinion. You know, I don't think Texas is a fan of these kinds of things.
No, it doesn't.
It's probably
seem that
more
way.
Of a conservative state. So that would be my guess that it's a precursor to telling Target that they can't do what
really?
They want to do.
Huh. Well, that would be very interesting.
Who
would have
thought bathrooms would create so much litigation?
You know what? I give very little. The only thought I give to a bathroom is where is it and is it unlocked? That's really, you know, and if I'm in a strange city, all right, is this hotel lobby going to have a bathroom that's easily accessible?
It's funny. I was just at the airport and I you know, you get off the plane, you have to go to the bathroom.
Right.
So I went running in and I ran in and it was the men's bathroom.
Oh.
I didn't see it. And so these guys were looking at me. I go, call me Caitlin. I guess it wasn't funny,
Did they freak out?
They kind of freaked out.
Sure. Well, I mean, listen, if somebody just comes, well, I imagine you barreling in with your various valets and your porters carrying your steamer trunks. That's how I see you traveling.
That's right.
I don't know why. Very 1940s. I have a crazy neighbor, not me, but a texter from the 773.
Okay.
I have a crazy neighbor, Might be my neighbor. Who knows? Have a crazy neighbor who posts random rants on their windows and have their windows plastered with Martin Luther King pictures. They are Asian. Now, they are calling bogus noise complaints in on me and all the other neighbors near their property. What can we do legally?
Well, as far as the postings, I mean, I don't think you can do much of anything about that unless it becomes some, like a nuisance. Does it reduce the value of your property because it's so, you know, does it violate an ordinance in your municipality? You might want to go to the village hall and find out, can people post things on their windows in this neighborhood? I don't know. But if not, there's really nothing you can do if you find that stuff offensive or just annoying. As far as them making reports and all that, you really can't stop them from doing that. I think you can talk to the police and say, listen, these people are off their rockers. I'd appreciate if you, you know, would just put an end to it. Or is there a way we can, you know, sometimes there are neighborhood dispute resolution mediators. But if people are truly crazy, and I'm telling you, I hear about these things. I don't think anyone has a neighbor who's not crazy. I think everyone's got one, right?
Sure. But I'm sure people think I'm crazy.
Yeah, well, we know that.
It was naked gardening day.
It was naked gardening day.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Wow. Every day is naked gardening day. It's the sun. It's, you know, you're in nature. So there's really nothing they can do. I think it was yesterday.
There's really nothing you can do to stop someone from reporting you to the police. You can't get them to stop reporting you to the police. At some point, the police are going to not respond,
right.
You know, but I think that you should maybe make an affirmative call over there and just tell them these people are crazy and that you prefer not to be bothered anymore.
Well, and would it help if they... You know, if all the other neighbors who are getting these complaints got together and then made that call and said, hey, we've got, here's 10 neighbors.
Yeah.
Here's what's going on.
Of course. And, you know, and even noise. You know, noise is such a subjective thing. But there are some municipalities, I know where I used to live, they had a noise detector.
Oh, really?
And, like, if your air conditioning unit or something was too loud, they had a little meter where they'd come out and detect whether it was too loud. And, I mean, you know, these are problems that we have all the time. Dogs barking, kids yelling, people stopping on the floors. You know, these things can make life, you know, really difficult for you when you live close to people. But there's really no good objective way of really deciding whether someone's actually violating a law.
All right. Well, good luck with that. Let's take a quick break. Karen Conti is here. We've got a number of questions that we will get to on the other side. If you are hesitating, don't, because we have very little time left. 312-981-7200. That is the number. If people don't get through tonight because you know they're hesitating,
you can email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com or call me 312-332-7800.
More with Karen after this. WGN. All right, let's get some more legal advice doled out. Karen Conti is here on Sundays. That's what she does. She gives you legal advice, so take it. 312-981-7200. Tom's been holding on. He's in Indiana. Hi, Tom. You're on WGN.
Hi, how are you, Karen? How are you?
Hi, Tom.
Here's my question. It's kind of long and complicated, so excuse me if I talk a little bit. But my father's being represented by a prominent personal injury firm in downtown Chicago. He's a mesothelioma patient. He subsequently passed away. All the money was going to my mother when they got settlement. She subsequently passed away. I'm the executor of her will and trust. He received another settlement. The check was sent to the wrong person, to my brother. And I asked the attorney and the firm to send me all the proper paperwork, all the documentation, what the amount of the check was, who they sent it to, the address they sent it to, all that stuff. I've asked four different people, three in writing, one over the telephone, and I can't get any answers, and they will not send me any paperwork. One, what legal recourse do I have? And two, am I legally entitled to the paperwork?
So you're the executor, correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
My mother's will and trust, yes. So the money that's coming to the estate is from the personal injury settlement from your father?
From mesothelioma lawsuits, yes, ma'am.
Okay. So the lawyer was the lawyer advised that you were the executor of the estate?
Yes, he knew.
And why did he send it to your brother?
Well, here's the strange part. He's my brother's former police partner who is now an attorney, and he's also my brother's best friend.
Okay, that just sounds like, I mean, that would just open yourself up to liability. So your brother took the check and didn't give it to the estate?
My brother took the check and put it in his bank, and when I called the firm about it, I actually got a hold of the president of the firm, the guy whose name is on the door. He knew nothing about it. They canceled the original check, but now won't send me any paperwork about it, about where the check was sent, who it was sent to, what the amount was. They refused to even
Okay.
Any information about it, nothing.
So you're asking about the paperwork, but the check was voided, correct? So the money didn't go to the wrong person.
The check was voided.
Okay. Okay. Good. All right.
After they deposited in his bank account, after I called them out about it.
You have an absolute right to know all this stuff. You are the client. Because you stepped into your father's shoes when he passed away. I'm sorry to hear about that. You became the executor, which means you stepped into his shoes. So you as the client would have a right to all of your file materials, and all of your file materials would include correspondence and the like. None of it is excluded. So you can demand your entire file. You should do that in writing. You should do it to the lawyers who have been involved. Do it to the lawyer whose name is on the door. Ask them that, that you need 10, you'd like to 10 days, and then you go pick up the file. Pick up the file.
I have done that, and they've refused to send. I've asked three times in writing, one time over the phone.
Okay.
And they refused to send it to me. That's why I'm asking you, what legal recourse do I have?
I think that's an ethical issue. I mean, maybe you have to take it up with the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, because that is your right as a client. And I think you should send one more letter. Forget the phone call. That doesn't make any difference. A letter that says you've been advised that this might be an ethical issue and that you would like someone to call you immediately and you would like the file turned over in 10 days. And then
I'm sorry. I forgot to tell you. I also had an attorney who I paid send them a letter requesting the information.
Okay. And they still didn't honor it. That's strange. That's strange, and I don't know what they're hiding or if they're just, not responding because they're busy. That doesn't sound like a good situation. But you have a right to it, so another letter, attorney registration, and just you can make a complaint as to them. Maybe they can help straighten it out for you.
All right, good luck, Tom.
I mean, I really hesitate toward, to tell people to report another lawyer because maybe I don't know the whole situation.
Sure.
Maybe there's a fact here that I don't know, and maybe these lawyers are doing something for a good reason. But from what, he's telling me, this is not a good reason, and he has a right to see the documents.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm no attorney. This was very interesting to me from the 217. How far can an item be willed or an item that is willed be controlled by deceased's wishes? For example, antique desk goes to A. If A doesn't want it, it goes to B, etc. If B accepts it and has the desk for X amount of years, can B do what he wants with the desk, for example, give it to son, donate, or even sell it, or does the will come back from the grave, so to speak, and B has to contact C to see if they want it? When is the will no longer in play?
That's such an interesting question, and you read it to me a little while ago, and I you have to just kind of think about what it means to have ownership of something.
Yeah.
If I give you something in my will and you accept it, that means you have it and that's yours.
Right.
Then you can do whatever you want with it.
Okay.
Right? I mean, you can give it to the Salvation Army. You can give it to your kids. You can chop it up for firewood.
Right.
But the will can't come back and say, oh, you had it for 5 years. Now you've got a right of first refusal with B.
Right.
You can't do that. That doesn't work that way.
If you choose to say, hey, I got grandma's desk, I can't use it anymore, do you want it? That's different.
That's different.
Again, it's up to you what you want to do with it.
I think when you bequeath an item, it belongs to the person who accepts it. Now, if A doesn't accept it and B wants it, I suppose that can happen. But if A decides to take it and sell it to, an antique store, that it's A's prerogative.
Okay. So the will can't keep the ghost of the will cannot come back and haunt you and say, hey.
The long arm of the will, right.
What's happening?
Yeah. Interesting question, though.
We haven't had one like that before. We've had a lot of interesting ones. all right. You sent me this story today about some kids in Newport Beach.
Yes.
Who were told at first that they could not wear their Dump Trump T-shirts. However, there were kids all year who had been wearing pro-Trump T-shirts, Trump for President, or whatever his slogan is, Make America Great Again.
Orange is the new... Never mind.
But they said the school was telling them at first that it was for their own safety because the pro-Trump kids were kind of bullying them. And, well, the school decided, you know what, it's not really for your safety. We got to let you wear them. And so now they got to wear their T-shirts.
You know, I love these legal questions because it brings up some interesting points. The First Amendment says the government cannot influence, you know, what you say and how you say it. So there have been all the cases. There was a real famous one where the kids wanted to wear black armbands during to protest the Vietnamese War, right? So right. Vietnam War. So the kids, you know, all the way, I think it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the court said, listen, it's not disturbing anybody. It's definitely free speech. You can't just because you don't like the speech or it's, you know, something that you don't agree with, we can't affect that. So the kids get to wear it. Now, where that crosses the line in a school is unless it's going to be lewd, offensive, not conducive to the educational process,
disruptive.
Study, yeah. So you can say girls can't wear a thong to school because you don't want that would cause major disruption.
Very sad.
Very sad. Or you can't wear, you know, t-shirts. There have been cases where even in a newspaper, a school newspaper, they want to say, you know, everyone should go do drugs now. You know, no, that schools are there to educate and to create good human beings, and schools can come in and say, this is not in compliance with our policy.
Right.
So there's kind of a thin line. But clearly wearing a T-shirt in support of a political candidate, to my knowledge, would be First Amendment protected.
And so the school has come
made
down
the right
on
decision.
That and said yes, and
yep.
they've also looked into the kids who were doing the bullying and have disciplined them too, so everything seems to be working out. All right, thank you. Once again, the time has flown. You will be on with Steve Cochran Wednesday morning.
On Wednesday morning.
6:40. And how do people get a hold of you?
Call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
All
Let's do this, then we'll say goodnight. It's WGN.